Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Product Coffee, a podcast where product management leaders share stories, advice, and thoughts on all things product over a cup of coffee. Grab a cup of Joe and join us to level up your product career 30 minutes at a time.
Welcome to the show today. Joining us, we have Kartik Suresh, a visionary in the world of technology and product strategy. Kartik is the founder of Ignition, a groundbreaking AI platform designed specifically for product teams aimed at boosting revenue, enhancing product development. I hope I'm getting that right, but I've used this tool about 5 years ago, I think. I can't remember when y'all started this, Kartik, but it was really interesting and when it came on the market and it... Yeah, 3 years. Okay.
There you go.
There's my sense of time for you. But it was really interesting at the time. I was super excited about the potential for it. And it's changed a whole ton. So I'm super excited to get into that. Kartik isn't just a founder. He's a seasoned product and technology leader at Kraft and Facebook. Today, he's here to share his insights and all things product over a cup of coffee. So sit back and relax and level up as we dive in. Kartik, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Star, for having me on the show. Yeah, excited for the conversation.
Also, you know, one of the things we talked about last time we jumped on a call was your journey. And it's super fascinating coming from Wall Street. So I want you to dive into that, but give us a little bit of background, kind of your journey into the tech world as it is today.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'd say a probably very non-traditional path. So just to go back in time, I started my career in algorithmic and high frequency trading space in Wall Street. It's basically New York. And I graduated right into recession in 2008. So it's been a while, but that's the best way you learn, like you're thrown right into the world. And I would say it was such a fascinating experience going through the whole upheaval during the 2008 financial crisis. Mm-hmm. My first job was in Morgan Stanley. I then moved to this company called Knight Capital Group, and they were a prop trading under algorithmic execution shock. And the fascinating thing, or not so fascinating thing, was like I was a part of a team there, and we had the highest trading loss ever. Like I think like 400 million in 30 minutes, and I'm obviously the company was bankrupt. So
yeah, it's a big one. That's a good moment to learn there, right?
yeah. And I was just young, and I was just like wondering, like, is this how the world works? It's like, oh my God, it's like, I mean, there's a lot of things which came out of that, like the whole kill switch on New York and NASDAQ, and, you know, the suspending of stock trading when the stock trades beyond a certain band, all of that actually were result of this blow up of Knight Capital. Not a lot of people know about it, but it actually like significantly changed the way trading is done in New York and NASDAQ after that incident. So yeah, I was there, and then I went through all of that. But you know, again, it was very like adrenaline driven, and it was fascinating. And you know, in my 20s, I wouldn't be anywhere else. But then I realized I didn't want to be in finance for an extended period of time. I didn't feel like I was adding a ton of value to the society. I felt like it's all about taking money and making more money, and like there was no tangible impact on the lives of people, like, you know, my family or my friends, and like. And I was always fascinated by the tech world. So I then decided to make the jump. I went to business school to figure out what to do, but I joined a company called Kraft, which is enterprise intelligence startup in London. But then the whole company moved to San Francisco. So I ended up in San Francisco, and I was one of the first employees there. So I saw the company go from almost zero to I think they are valued north of 100 or 150 million today. So I was there for the first 4 years, where we had to go through the whole startup journey, had to see multiple pivots, and before we found product market fit. And it was great to see the growth. Now there are more than 100 plus employees there. So after that, I was like, okay, let me check out a big company, because I've been in startup. So I was like, okay, let's go to Facebook. So I interviewed there and lucky enough to get a job as a PM. And I was a PM on the Facebook search team and later one of the early growth PMs on the Facebook Reality Labs team. Wow. I mean, now it's Meta, of course. So sure. The Facebook Reality Labs became such a big part of Zuck's vision that he decided to rebrand the whole company. So it was so fascinating. So I was there before it was called Meta. So yeah, I mean, it was fascinating for different reasons because I was always under the impression, like in big companies, you know, you don't grow as much or the chaos is not as much there, but you know, as startup, but I was completely wrong, especially in Facebook Reality Labs, because I think I was like the third growth PM in a team. And then in 6 months, there were like another 10 PMs added, another 100 engineers added. So within 6 months, I went from a junior person, you know, in terms of like experience in that team, to like one of the senior most people, which, you know, it's again, it's insane if you think about it. But I was like lucky enough to see that growth. I always felt like my heart belonged in the world of startups and entrepreneurship. And I always wanted to start a company. And then when I was launching one of the products for Facebook, the launch plan was like a spreadsheet with 100 tabs and nobody knew where to find anything about the launch, whether it was like, you know, with the latest campaign or the messaging or the positioning or the assets for the launch. And I, as a PM, was working with the marketing teams to help with the launch. And it felt like there has to be a better way to manage it. And that's when I met my co-founder, Derek, who used to run product marketing for Rippling. And then we both decided to, you know, start Ignition to solve this problem of, you know, getting the product teams to actually talk to marketing and sales teams and aligning that and creating a really good go-to-market process. So yeah, here we are 2 years down the lane. We have raised about $8 million, you know, backed by some of the best venture firms like Altman Capital, Blink Capital, Audacious Ventures. And it's been a great journey. And yeah, looking forward to sharing that, sharing more about each of these phases of my life.
Wow, that is, I love that. I love the diversity of all the new different experiences, employment experiences. I want to kind of dig into that a little bit. What's driving that desire to move from, you know, something so drastic, right? At each phase here, it seems like, was this intentional? Was this, what's driving that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's all about, for me, it's all about taking risks in life. I feel like growth, if you're not taking risk, then, you know, you know, if you're in the same job for 10 years or if you're doing the same thing for 10 years, in my opinion, of course, there are other people who have a very different opinion about this, that if you're not learning, the learning comes from change and the change comes from taking risks. And that's one thing I always push myself throughout my career. So once I feel comfortable in a certain role or a certain industry, then I actually push myself to seek what's next. And that's what has led to all of these like different, you know, really diverse career and journey from Wall Street to a startup, to a big company, back to founding a company. And also lived in Europe for a few years in between. But that I feel like now, even now that now, when I actually think about building a startup, like I have such diverse opinions and views that I can do a way better job than if I was just like, if I started my career at Amazon and spent 20 years at Amazon and now I'm building a company. I think it's going to be very different. So so it's all about like, it comes back to this personality trait of trying to take risks and not sure. trying to feel comfortable in the same position for too long.
Got it. Yeah. So the signal of boredom or I'm not learning, you have that growth mindset where you're kind of being ambitious and wanting to learn what's new, what's next. I want to talk a little bit more about that journey too, because that makes sense on the surface, but it almost seems like every jump that you've gone to has been a quote unquote success, but tell me that that's not the case.
Not at all. There are so many scar tissues. It definitely takes a toll, that's what drives me, you know, the adrenaline is, you know, what drives me. So, you know, as I said, like the very, very first job, you know, we had this $400 million blow up where the company went bankrupt. And, you know, the whole team was like, half the team was laid off and we had to readjust to a new environment the very next day. It's not like you had a 1 month transition time, right? It's just like Friday, you go back to, you know, go back home and then Monday, it's a different company, different people, like your boss is different. Like it's that kind of like changes, which is great for, I mean, I, I mean, I, correct me. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say it was bad, but at that time, going through that was very terrifying, like absolutely terrifying. But looking back, it was such a great experience. So I feel like, Ben, I started another company with another actually good friend of mine while I was in London. The original idea was to create like a aggregator for all the peer-to-peer loans. Those are the times when Lending Club and Prosper were really like taking off, and the peer-to-peer loan as a concept was taking off.
Was that prior to Kraft?
Yeah, prior to Kraft. I worked on it for I think a year or so, but it didn't go anywhere because we had so many problems with product market fit, and then me and my co-founder, we didn't agree on the path forward. So I had to like leave that and then join Kraft. So like, and then those
this
are like
great. This is what I want to hear.
Yeah.
It's not so riddled with roses, but I mean, you have that it sounds like that's the journey, right? You use that experience, you learn from that, and then you apply those learnings in your next position in some way.
Exactly. And that's 100%. I wouldn't be who I am today if I hadn't had all those experiences, because those are the things which actually make you successful, you know, in your next or the next gig. Now, coming back to Kraft, even at Kraft, it was not like a straight linear graph. It was a lot of ups and downs. Like, Kraft was when we started Kraft was a company intelligence platform, and the first product was selling to financial like hedge funds, because we're going to track all the alternative metrics on companies like employee numbers or job count, and so hedge funds could use the data to trade, for example. But that didn't go anywhere because, like, one, the hedge funds, the financial services was very demanding, and also like they churned a lot. So we didn't feel like there was a venture scale company which could be built in that space. So then we pivoted to sales. We started selling to sales, where we were actually like, the idea is like prospect intelligence. Like, you have all these company info. Like, if somebody hired a head of product, and if you're selling a product management tool, great. It's a great signal to go pitch, because I'm sure they're looking to make changes, right? So things like that. But that again did not work because the salespeople were not willing to pay a lot of money. It's paying like $10 a month. Yeah. Again, we would never build a venture scale business there. It could be a nice lifestyle business. So then where we found product market fit was in supply chain space, where a lot of these big manufacturers and defense industries were trying to onboard like thousands of suppliers, and they had no idea who these companies were. And Kraft helped them with risk management on the vendors. And then people were willing to pay like millions of dollars for that. And nobody in the company was a supply chain expert. Right. We just kind of fell into it because one of the people reached out to a website, and, you know, they have to be one of the largest defense companies. So then Kraft now today is like, I'm valued at 150 million or something. Right. So you never know, like, you go through so many failures, and when you're going through it, you have existential crisis. It's like, I should have been at Facebook. I should have been at Google. Like, I should have been getting a nice salary and having good time. Like, why am I going through this? Nothing is working. I am a failure, you know, the whole company is failing, and nobody's going to recognize me as a failure. Like, you go through so many, like, you know, crazy kind of existential crisis and questions, you know, when you're going through that, but you got to persevere, and you got to move on. You got to, like, those are the things which actually make you like, such a different person and a thought leader, and also like, you know, make you successful in the future. So, I mean, I can literally have a full podcast about all my failures.
Well, I do think it's important to talk about, right? Because a lot of folks, I think there is this deep sense, especially in product management and entrepreneurship, there's this fear of failure. There's this imposter syndrome feeling as well, that we all feel in some way, shape or form. And just hearing that call to continue, right? To push on, right? I think that's, you know, you've proven that as a way to quote unquote get there, right? Even though that's probably not there that you want it yet, but it's a stepping stone, and you've been able to get past the hard times, and you've been continuing on with these like really great times, right? Where you get these amazing experiences that you get to be a part of and contribute to. So it's, I think that's a good message for a lot of the listeners at this phase, because we do have a lot of folks getting laid off, right? We have a lot of folks dealing with a lot of these movements of should we start my own company? Should I start my second venture? I failed. Do I keep doing this? Do I switch a career now? Like, I don't know what to do, especially with AI coming. So I want to hear a little bit now.
Yeah.
Switching over. Let's go with startup to Facebook, because I know there's so many different experiences that you've probably gained from that leap. So what were kind of some of the similarities and differences from small versus enterprise organizations?
That's a great question. So I think even just being I'm talking from a PM perspective or product perspective, being at a startup versus being at a big company is two completely different roles. Even though the title can be a product manager, because, you know, for example, at Facebook, I had a whole team supporting me. I had my own designer. I had a data scientist pulling all the queries. I had a user researcher going and talking to users and helping me with the feedback. And then obviously the engineering manager and the whole team. And then if there's something else I needed, I could always ask for that resource. So there was like an entire team supporting you. And if I needed more resource, and I could go get it. And then a lot of my work came down to stakeholder management. You know, I would say like 20 to 30% of my time was actually building products, you know, thinking about features, coming up with product strategy. And 70% of my time was unblocking engineers, talking to the other teams for dependency, getting approvals from legal and policy teams for the features, or presenting the strategy to the VP or the head of the department to get the approval for your next phase and going through the planning cycle. And, you know, it's literally that I spent 70% of the time doing that, which, you know, I didn't expect it. I was expecting like 80% of the time I'm going to be building the next feature which goes viral on Facebook.
Was that the ratio back at the startup? It was more of that? Okay.
No, startup, at Facebook.
Right, but the inverse. So
the inverse.
Was that the difference?
To the startup world, it's exactly inverse. Like, you know, nobody cares about you creating a nice deck and presenting your strategies. Like, what do you get done last week? You know, is a customer churning? You know, this customer has asked for this and we need to close the deal next week. Did you ship? Like, it's a very different way. And then, okay, I don't have a user. And so what do you mean user research? And just go talk to the users. I don't have a data scientist who can figure out how to write SQL queries. You're not going to pay for a nice analytics data tool. Just go into the database, write a SQL query, pull the data, put it in a spreadsheet and figure out the metrics, figure out the retention curves. Like, it's like, do it yourself. Like, if you don't know it, you learn it or find somebody on Upwork and hire them to do it. So it's like a completely different mentality.
Yeah, I love that, because it like forces you to get into that. Yeah, learn those things you might not be as comfortable with. It pushes you out of the comfort zone. Going in the growth mindset, I feel like you never get bored in that. But those are different skills, right? You're learning now stakeholder management, right? And communication, and some of those soft skills might not be those strengths in the other role. And now you're being forced to emphasize that. What was that journey like between the maker versus kind of the facilitator type of percentage difference for you?
Yeah, it was a big change for me. Like, I had to adopt quickly. You know, for example, right? Like, you know, when I joined Facebook, one of the things I had to do every week was like, to like, you know, blow up my team's work, you know, present it to the whole like group thing. Okay, what we did last week and what were the achievements? And also like, and I know I spent almost like 2 to 3 hours writing that. When I joined Facebook, I didn't appreciate that. I was like, why am I wasting time? I need to be shipping features. I need to be getting it done. But a big part of it in a large company is also making sure people take notice of what the engineers are working on and how that's impacting their team. And, you know, for example, 3 or 4 months into my job, I realized how critical that was, even though I was very skeptical that I was actually wasting my time. And then I realized that was probably one of the most impactful work I was doing by, giving enough spotlight on my engineers and then, you know, showcasing their work to the entire org, because it gets lost in this huge org. And that helps also shape the future roadmap and make sure we are in the same direction. So small things like that, when in a startup, you wouldn't even think about doing it. In a big company, it's actually a very critical part of your role. And as I said, like unblocking the engineers by talking to other teams and like, you know, they have their own roadmap. They're going to get bonus and promotion based on what they are assigned to do. So then how do you negotiate with them to somehow make space in their roadmap to help with some dependency which your team needs to succeed when they have no incentive to do it? So, and then you have this whole stick and, you know, carrot and the stick approach where, you know, you may offer one engineer from your team to help with their project. Or the stick would be like you escalated to the VP saying to their manager saying, hey, yeah, we need this. And, you know, it's in the interest of the organization's priorities, even though it's not in your product team's priorities. So let's escalate and let's come up with some, you know, so this is like, is so different from the job I was doing. And then at startup, you're just like, no, it's like, get shit done. I mean, sorry for my word, like, it was, you know, it's just like, you know,
should be a poster on our walls here. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, we're running out of money in 6 months and we got to ship this XYZ and then get to this revenue target in the next 3 months, you know, to raise the next round. Otherwise, we won't have a job. Forget job. We won't have a company.
Yeah.
So, those are some of the differences, I think, just like work. That's why I fundamentally feel these two are so different roles. So when somebody is like, I'm a product manager, but I'm like, okay, but which company, what stage? And, you know, and the other thing I would add is like, just because you've been like, been at Facebook or Google or Fang, any of the Fang companies for 10 years and you succeed as a PM doesn't mean that you can just go to a startup and become successful at all, because it's fundamentally requires so many skills. So you just got to adopt and change based on the requirements.
I would imagine the accountability is different as well at these different roles. It's almost inherent accountability at the startup where, you're going to run out of money and capital, and so you need to make something happen. But, you know, at the startups that you were PM at, no, it wasn't necessarily your company at the time, right? Like this was you're accountable to somebody and their goals and their, you know, the business's outcome, potentially the boards, right? So how did that differ from the startup to the enterprise?
You know, this is such a loaded question because in startup is very clear. You have the CEO on the board and you're directly reporting to the founder. And I mean, I'm early stage startup. Again, startup can also be late stage. But early stage startup, you're just talking to the CEO and you're on the same page. And there's no politics, there's no diplomacy, there's nothing. It's just everyone knows this is the OKR, you know, we need to get done, which is a good thing. But on a larger org, there's so many other things at play. Like, as you said, the incentives of a VP might be different from the incentives of a director of a product of two different product teams. And it's just how do you navigate that? And as a PM, you need to be subconsciously aware of what they're exactly asking and how do you push that. I mean, there's also like, you know, there's times when even within large org, there are people who are like, no, you know what, as a company, this is our priority. So it doesn't matter if I don't meet my OKRs or goals, let's just align to make sure we meet the company's goals. But there are other people who are like, you know, it's more about like meeting my goals and making sure I look good. So Even I've seen sometimes even the roadmap, the brainstorming sessions and the roadmapping sessions being like kind of twisted in a way it aligns with the mission. Even though we were like, the whole point of a brainstorming session is to like brainstorm and get new ideas into the whiteboard and then vote on it and then like work on it. But I've seen where it would be conducted in a way that we're all like pushing to one feature, getting to the top of the vote list, and so that it aligns with the VPs. So there's like all of these things which you got to be
like
aware.
Political. Yeah, it's more expert in politics and relationship building, and than it is building the products almost. Which is that's very interesting. It's good insight for folks that on both sides of the equation here. I think all the more important for diversity of experience, right? Getting the ability to try both and see where you gravitate towards, I think is really important in your career.
Yeah. Not a lot of people talk about it. Like nobody talks about this on LinkedIn, you know, such an important part of your skill set, especially as a PM. If you're an engineer, you know, all of these things doesn't matter as much. But as a PM, when you're like a glue, you're kind of glue between so many different teams and you're kind of... this is such an important skill. And then people obviously talk about it because it's very uncomfortable, just like politics.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable. So, but again, what's going to make you successful and grow become a VP or a head of, you know, CPO one day is like, you are actually good at this. In addition to obviously building a great product and making sure your metrics like retention is high and people are actually adopting your product, that's like table stakes.
Love that. Tell me more about that transition into leadership for you. So product leadership, meaning where you're starting to manage individuals or responsible for P&L and what have you. What was that experience like for you, year one, year two? What would that look like?
Yeah, I think there, then you focus less on the product itself, and then you focus more on empowering individuals to then work on the product to hit your goals. So it's all about, I think the shift is from like empowering, you know, the features to serve the needs of the users to empowering people who report to you to then be able to like execute and deliver to your users. So it's all about, you know, being, again, number one thing is empathy, trying to really understand what other people are going through. Having a very clear view of what their strengths are and what their, you know, weaknesses are, and pushing to double down on. So I belong to this side of this debate where I ask people not to want to worry about the weakness, not to focus, not even focus on the weakness, but instead double down on the strengths, because I'd rather you be 10x good at one thing versus just be 1x good at everything.
Mm.
So it's all about, you know, then people who do the other things can be managed out, and you know, you can, there's a way of like communicating that so that the weakness doesn't come in the way of growth. But so for me, it's about like very clearly defining what the strengths are, doubling down on the strengths, and make the strength a 10x strength. You know, you as an individual have, and then empowering them to actually then go build really good products and serve the needs of the people.
So instead of building and empowering your customers, you're switching to the empower with context, empower individuals is more of a people job, right?
Yeah.
And mixed with vision and strategy, and that's part of the context you're sharing.
Yeah.
And when you get into, I want to hear more about the actual stumbles that you've had in that transition. Did you learn, like a different way of, this isn't working, or like, was it, yeah, what were those kind of failures, if we're on that topic, right, from earlier, what were those moving into the leadership position for you?
Yeah, I think there's another concept of like motivation, and motivation, there's two types of motivation, right? One is like, okay, you do this work, you get promoted, you get your next level, or you get your bonus, or you get like additional equity. The other type of motivation is about being able to deliver on a mission. And the first one is, I think it's good in the short term. But the second one is what you can actually build a really long-term successful product. And unfortunately, in larger companies, the latter is harder, which is why you even see people moving from team to team to team in like every year. You see them switching. Mm-hmm. I switch three teams as well, because you know, the motivation is more, okay, how do I get my 5-star rating on my performance review? I get my next level, versus like making metaverse for Facebook successful, right? And then in a startup land or in early, and even in like some of the smaller teams in Facebook, it's all about like, forget about your leveling, forget about your title. It's a mission, like, you know, you're fundamentally changing the way people are going to be interacting with payments. Or, you know, we are fundamentally changing the way with people talk to each other. Instead of going to a game and sitting, and then they can actually put on an Oculus and like watch a game together at their home. Like, it's a mission which drives you. And I think when some of the best leaders I've worked with, and me myself, what I've seen as I grew in my journey is like, initially I made the mistake of thinking about, okay, like, how can I incentivize this person in terms of like, comp, or in terms of title, in terms of bonus, and all of that, you know, other things, other soft skills. I mean, those are important too. I'm not going to downplay them. Those are equally important, but that's not sticky. But when I can actually like really, have this like call of duty, and then, you know, call to arms, like, mm-hmm. we're going to change the way products are built. You know, we're going to change the way payments are done. We're going to change the way, like, you know, suppliers actually evaluate, you know, manufacturers evaluate their suppliers, and you know, we're going to change, you know, basically the way something is done and why that requires to be changed, and, you know, which is such an important aspect, then the level of motivation is insane. That's where, like, I see true 10x efforts come from the teams. In fact, I myself, the reason I moved from Wall Street, where I was making really good money, to the Valley, is because I wanted to have that kind of an impact.
Mm.
So yeah. I think one of the biggest learnings, I mean, people talk about it. This is very easy to talk about, but actually in practice, you know, in day-to-day, you know, when you're in the weeds as a leader, you forget about this. It's like my job as a leader is to motivate. I'm the general of the army. I need to motivate my troops to go deliver on this mission. And that's my number one OKR. The other things don't matter as much. So I think once you have that in your DNA and you keep talking about it and you see such a huge transition in your own, you know, persona as a leader and the way your team is performing and the NPS score of the team, like everything just goes up.
Yeah, that makes sense a lot. So more and more on the vision casting, the storytelling, the motivation, it's aligning their, you know, aspirations to a common mission that we can all get behind and keeping that in the forefront for these folks and versus motivating them financially or, hey, go do this, telling folks what to do. I think that makes sense. Now, when you went into, when you moved into leadership and you started to learn some of that, right? You started to learn what worked and what didn't and the power of context and storytelling and vision and motivation. Were there any of those kind of tacking moments? We talk about this a lot. I think this is from Jared Spool, but he talks about kind of planting this flag in the sand and then sailboat tacking towards getting to that vision. So give me some of those tacking kind of corrections for yourself personally as a leader.
Yeah.
I'd love to get it into that.
Yeah. You know, it's, so I can actually talk about Ignition actually here, right? So here, you know, we are building that, I think, the next generation, you know, AI powered product management platform. And, you know, I think, for example, in our space, the product management tools haven't changed in a decade. It's the same functionality where nobody wants a roadmap. Like, you know, it's very different the way you think about like how products are built these days. And, you also have leaders like Brian Chesky, for example, you know, calling on PMs, like also think about messaging and positioning. Like it's not just enough. You think about your strategy and sprint cycles and, you know, shipping into production and then go for a party. But you need to also think about how you're going to message it to your users. How are they going to understand the value prop? How are you going to position it? Like how are you going to sell it? Right? How are you going to get the people to buy your product? So, there's so many things going on. So I think when we think about Ignition or when we, you know, I mean, also setting up the mission is all, it's about that. It's like, how do we, it's almost like when product folks, you know, product teams think about it, it's like the revenue is like, so salespeople own the revenue. Marketing people own the website and messaging and ads and whatever they're doing. My job is to just, you know, ship a really good product, which, you know, works without bugs and then does what it's supposed to do to solve a problem and I'm done. But we're like, no, you know, at the end of the day, you're part of a business and here we are, you know, you're trying to like work towards a mission. And the big part of that is like not just building a great product, but also thinking about how do you get the product into the hands of the people, which is where the whole go-to-market comes in. Like, how do you make sure that, you know, it actually, first of all, is targeted at the right persona. So, you know, even product teams is such a broad persona. Is it a product manager? Is it a product ops? Is it a product marketer? Is it a senior product marketer? Is it a junior product marketer? Like, how do you think about how do you think about the jobs to be done? And then, okay, like how do you position it? All these competitors are out in the market. So how are you different from them? So how are you going to message it? So when people start using your product, do they get that message? Like, even you can put out something on the website, but when they come to the product and they start onboarding, it's your job to make sure it aligns with what we are telling people your product does. So it's all about thinking through the lens of a go-to-market as a product manager while you're building the product. And that's what we are building Ignition for, is to help product teams think about go-to-market from day one, thinking about messaging, positioning, thinking about like how do we make sure that the product actually gets adopted, you know, once it's shipped to production. So that's the flag. It's like when we are successful, when, you know, product and marketing and sales teams, they all talk the same language in terms of go to market and there's no misalignment and a lot of that is like, okay, so that's a flag. But then we obviously know product and marketing teams are so different. Product teams work on a waterfall model or agile model. We have a sprint cycle every 2 weeks. For marketing people, there's like one launch coming up June 1st. And you work back from the launch. Everything is going towards that one date. And it doesn't work like that for engineering teams, because And
right.
So like, how do you make these two teams come together? So, and then, so you set this mission and then like, you then realize, oh, okay, all of these teams are such a different, they talk different language. So you then have to go through okay, let me start like much earlier in the funnel. Let's make sure like product managers even start thinking about marketing as an important topic. So you just go back to you define the more granular steps in order to get your final mission. The second thing I'd like to add is like, especially in a startup, the mission, the flag keeps moving. Mm. In a large company, you definitely have probably this Zuck's vision. It's like 5 years down the lane, you'll have this glass, which, it's your personal computer. You can do everything from your glass. You can talk to people. I can do the podcast with the glass, and that's mission. Mm. Everyone's working towards that. In a startup, especially early stage, you still don't know what's going to make you a big company, and it's all about survival.
You're just trying to survive, yeah.
So the flag keeps moving. So you have this flag which you message your troops saying, this is what we're going to get and going to go get, and that's how we're going to get. And then next month, the flag is still here.
Yeah, you got to be really good at improv. That's
yeah. So you'd be like, you just had this like call to arms of this amazing thing you're going to build, like, we're going to change the way the fund managers are going to use company data to make money. And then next month, you're like, oh, by the way, we're going to change the way the salespeople are going to prospect leads. So it's another whole different game where, you need to go through like why we did that. What was the motivation? Mm. You need to give a lot of context. So in addition to like taking this like up and down route to your flag, it's also like multiple flags and multiple different, So yeah, it's an easy answer to that.
You mentioned that Brian Chesky's messaging about PMs are needing to get more into the weeds and go to market. I'm curious to get your perspective on this because you've seen both. You're at a startup right now or scale up. I don't know how y'all classify yourselves, but PMs need to do more. And it's almost like PMs need to be more like startup PMs. But what these enterprises are incentivizing, and what works, is more politics and soft skills. So it doesn't seem to be working. It's like the desire is like, hey, we just want to be a startup again. Do the things that startup PMs do.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, we're going to make it really hard for you to do that.
Yeah.
is that kind of the sense you get as well?
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. It's unfortunately, that's the way it is. And that's the fun. I mean, I think that's also what makes us humans. It's just like, there is like an ideal vision of how the world has to be, but that ignores all the imperfections we have. This all ignores all the emotions we have. It's not just like a machine where it's not like a robot where you just like do this. So, and that's where it falls apart, right? So, when the emotions come in, like, it's a very different game. But coming back to, Brian Chesky's message, it's not that like, I think there's a lot of debate on social media. It's not that the PM job is becoming irrelevant or going to be relevant in 5 years. I think PM job is more relevant than ever. It's almost like a product manager at the center of the universe. And literally the glue in every startup, Facebook, wherever I've worked, like PMs have always been the glue which holds together multiple engineering, marketing, customer success, design, user research to actually ship and make the company successful. But it's actually the other way around. The PMs are going to get even more important. So it's not just enough if you work with your engineers to ship a product. And that's where the messaging is coming from, right? So you also need to think like a marketer. You need to think about like, how am I going to brand this? How am I going to message this? Like, how am I going to, position this, like, to make sure that people actually get it? So it's actually like you're probably taking on even more responsibilities as a PM.
It's interesting. It seems like almost with the assistance of AI and some of the things y'all are doing as well, it's like, well, maybe those other marketing sales functions become less relevant over time. And you have this shift towards more of a product company. And it's just simply that. And everything is done by this team that handles all these different disciplines, or, it is that feasible, desirable, viable kind of triangle that we're all trying to maintain and balance. And maybe that just becomes a team of three. It's like super lean and they can handle it all now with the assistance of AI. Where do you kind of see things going in that respect?
Exactly. Like AI is so game changing, specifically to solve this problem. Let me give a specific example, right? you know, let's say when a product manager is thinking about building a feature, let's say he or she like, you know, talked to a bunch of people and gathered some insights, and the customer was complaining. And that's the root of the idea. And then that idea becomes into a roadmap feature, and then that gets shipped. And then now the product managers to the marketers, like, hey, we shipped this, you know, referral feature for Oculus. Go, you know, I mean, referral feature is baggage. Like, okay, we shipped this feature, now go market it. But the marketer doesn't have any context of where this idea came from, who asked for it, was this talked a lot in sales conversations before, you know, and how did the customers talk about the problem in their own language? Because then I can use that and create a really good, you know, marketing collateral or a copy for a Facebook ad, right? But the marketer today has none of those contexts. Mm-hmm. They almost start from scratch. They again do the user research. They again go talk to users. They again present this product and say, how are you going to talk about it in your own language? Like all of that. And then they do their own thing. So what AI
seems like a lot of waste.
It seems like a lot of waste, inefficient. Yeah. And at the end of the day, when it actually ships product, the PM is like, wait a minute. This is not what a feature I built. It doesn't sound like what I was actually building or the problem I was actually solving. Right. Are you sure, Mr. Marketer? Right. So it's just like, it is so much disconnect. So where AI comes in, for example, here would be like, AI would be like, you know, as a marketer, I can just go with, hey, AI, go look through all the conversations of this PM, their customer tickets, their intercom conversations, all the sales conversations where this feature was talked about or mentioned. And then put me a summary, and then I have a summary. And then, okay, this is great. Now tell me which conversation actually had this. Okay, put me this conversation. I can see the conversation, and I can actually hear the user talk about the problem in their own language. And then I'm like, great, now I get it. Now I can use that to create a Facebook ad or a Google search ad, which uses the same language as the end user. And then boom, everyone is on the same page, and the customer is like, oh yeah, that's the problem I want to solve. So the activation, I mean, the whole conversion improves. So it's just like becomes one seamless process, right from idea generation all the way to like getting it into the hands of the user.
Interesting. And Ignition is helping with that. So tell me more about starting it. I want to hear like early stage. Was this a bootstrap thing? Did you all kind of do something on the side and then find your product market fit? Was it, tell me more about that journey.
Yeah, so Ignition, when we first started Ignition, it was all about solving this, specifically the go-to-market problem. And one more on the strategy side, it's basically like, how do you come up with a really good go-to-market plan? It's like the feature has been shipped to production. Now, great, what's next? Like, how do you think about who's your persona? And then how do you message it so that the end user gets the value prop? And how do you position it so that the users understand how it's different from all the competitors? What channels are you going to use to market your product based on where your end user lives? And how are you going to align, like get all the approvals from the legal policy or your execs in the company to show that you can ship the feature and actually do a launch and orchestrate the launch in one platform? So that's what we started with Ignition for. And then our first persona was a PMM, like we started building for a product marketer. And then as we grew and evolved, we realized it's just solving one piece of the puzzle. It'll be great if we can also get product teams onto Ignition, because we have the full stack, which I just talked about, like how you can track a feature all the way from insight to a launch. So then we expanded Ignition to build research and road mapping. So on the research side, you can do your competitive research or analyze all your customer conversations and do your customer conversations insights analysis on Ignition, and then gather all your draft ideas. And then you can move to a build phase where you can, you know, do your road mapping and then, you know, work with engineers to actually build the product. And then you can use Ignition to then actually launch the product, create a go-to-market plan. So where Ignition is today is it has become a full-fledged platform where you can research and build and then launch all in like basically the entire product development lifecycle on Ignition. And so that's how Ignition started, and that's where we are today.
That's where you are today. Yeah. And what was that first moment of aha for y'all? Like, did you really land with a certain customer persona type that you were really solving a problem for them and you got signal and they were paying for it? Like, was there that kind of story of success with you guys that it was like, yeah, this is it. We can go raise more rounds or, you know, continue it.
I mean, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, this is my third startup and I still always trip up on prospect conversations because it's a mom's book, right? It's a mom's test. Sorry, yeah. Mom's test.
Love that book. Yeah.
So, book. You know, for people who haven't read it, I highly encourage to, you know, for them to read it. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, even if you're my third startup, even if I read that book like a couple of times, I got on a call with like, let's say my friend at Facebook who was a PM mm-hmm. and I was like, hey, PM friend, look at this feature I'm building. They're like, oh, amazing. I love it. I can't wait to use it.
Immediately bring up your solution.
Hey, look at my shiny toy.
Yeah, like, and then I just go build it. I'm like, I have this validation. And then I'm like, okay, I'm building. Now use it. They're like, oh, but, you know, it's going to be so hard to get my engineering team onto this. Like, it's the same. It's my third startup. I still trip up. It's such a hard, I'm still like learning, to be honest. Yeah. It's such a hard conversation. So, okay, now coming back to your question. the first, you know, we've been for PMMs and, you know, PMMs, we got really good feedback on the calls. They were like, when you put your credit card down, they're like, hell yeah, we will do it. But when we built the product and when we went to market, you know, there's like the recession hit in 2022, 2023, when everyone was getting, you know, the Fed raised the interest rates from like 0.1% all the way to 5% in like 8 months and like pretty much killed the venture market and So then we were like, all the PMMs were there, changed jobs or laid off or like, they're like, I was no budget. And PMM as a function also felt like they didn't have as much, social capital to get the budget approved from the execs as much as like another persona like sales. So it got harder. So that was a big learning for us. But the good thing was like, if we gave them for free or if they started using us, they loved it. So they always loved the product and they felt like, okay, great. Somebody's actually building a product for PMMs, and a dedicated product for PMMs and the first source of truth for a PMM. So they loved it and they loved the fact that Ignition was building for it, but we couldn't scale, with just that. The first aha moment was like, great, PMM, they start using it, they love it, they're coming back every day or every week, depending on the launch frequency to actually use Ignition, and they're giving good feedback. I mean, okay, great. So first hurdle solved, we don't have to pivot from this. We can continue building on top of this. But the second problem is like, okay, we're not making as much money as we thought we were going to make. So we need to extend, and then we need to get the whole product team onboarded. We need to expand the seat count in companies. So they build for product teams, and then, you know, we build for product teams, and now we're talking to PMs and head of products, and they see the tool and like, okay. And then we have Brian, again, luckily we have Brian Chesky's of the world talking about Ignition's mission, and we built Ignition, we started Ignition way before even Brian even talked about it. And so it seems like the market is also moving towards our mission, right? So that's really helped. And that was like another, it's not just an aha moment, it's a lucky moment where PMs are like, hey, I need to know what this go-to-market thing is all about. You know, I don't even have a PMM, and I'm like a sole PM in my company, or like, you know, we have like five PMs in a company, but no product marketing. And can Ignition help? Like, yeah, we can help. And then, I'm the first
PMM.
That seems to
be, like, I wanted to ask more about where it's working today. It seems like there's more of a market there, right? Is that what you're saying now? Or
yeah, exactly. There's a lot of, there's a huge market there. It's either like, I'm the first PMM. Nobody in this company cares about what PMMs do. How do I explain PMM function? And how do I set up a PMM go-to-market process here? PMs are like, I don't have a PMM, or we have a very new PM. So can you teach me about go-to-market? So we're getting a lot of traction there. Yeah. In addition to like the large PMM teams before who were using us and loved us, and they like continue to like, we continue to double down on them. And so we have this market where we have like the top 10% of PMM, so you get it, who are like, okay, I really need to buy it, and who have the social capital to get budget. That's still our primary persona. And that's the user who's like, they will be like, if you wake them in the middle of the night and say, there's one tool I'm going to give you. Can you tell me which one? I'm going to take away all the other 100 tools, but you can choose one. They will say it's Ignition, right? So it's that persona. But now we are building to make sure we can get PM as well to be very successful on Ignition.
Wonderful. I love that how you all have evolved over the last few years. And I tried out some of the recent stuff as well and really enjoyed a lot of the features that you all are rolling out. It's been fun to experiment with. So I'm excited to use that on an ongoing basis. So thank you for doing what you're doing. Let's wrap up with a bit of homework for our listeners for the week. Based on our conversation, was there something that they can put into practice this week after they listen to the show to kind of make that growth step for them?
Yeah.
What do you got for them?
Yeah. I got a good one. I'm assuming the persona is a PM here. So let's imagine you're a product manager or you're basically even an engineer for that matter. Your homework is to come up with a go-to-market plan for a feature or a product you plan to ship this quarter. So think about, it's not just about the roadmap and the sprint cycle and all the Jira and linear tasks which you're using to get into production. It's not that. It's about once it's shipped, how are you going to talk about it to your end user? How are you going to position it? Can you do your competitive research to figure out like how this feature is different from what the competitors offer? And where are you going to find the users, you know, in terms of channels? What are you going to use to actually promote this feature to your users? Just come up with a go-to-market plan for the next feature you're building. So that's the homework.
Love it. That's great. For me, it's obviously go try out Ignition. It's free to try out. So go do that. And that's one of those ways that you can document that homework.
Yes, exactly.
And then tell them the Proud of Coffee sent you. Outside of that, you know, one of the things we've been talking about a lot has been failure in this episode and then in some other episodes as well. But make sure that you're setting ambitious goals for yourself. Make sure that you have good time frames for these things. Take a look at that diversity of experience we talked about. So the, you know, have I only been at startups or have I only been at enterprise companies for 20 years, whatever it is. And then try to push yourself. I mean, if you're always comfortable there, you're not learning, you're not growing. So try and see what else is out there, even if the market is turbulent. Get uncomfortable, see what happens. Anything else, Kartik, on your side? Where can folks find you or anything else that you want to promote?
Yeah, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. You can look at my name or my Twitter handle is also just Kartik Suresh. Connect with me on Twitter or LinkedIn. Definitely go, please go check out Ignition. We'd love your feedback. We have a very generous freemium plan. So you can, you know, do pretty much a lot of the things I talked about using Ignition. And then, yeah, finally, you know, don't forget to, you know, take risks. Don't get too comfortable. Risk is the only way for growth.
Well, thanks again, Kartik. This has been an awesome conversation. Looks like we finished up for coffee. So go level up.
This has been Product Coffee, produced and engineered by me, Kevin Gentry. You can now record a voice message and send us ideas or topics to cover, and who knows, we might end up playing it on the show. You can also become a supporter of Product Coffee by contributing a monthly donation to help us sustain future episodes. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Product Coffee on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.